Radio Prague News.
The Czech foreign minister has visited Benghazi for talks with Libya's National Transitional Council. The Czech government has approved another three healthcare reform bills. And the NHL club, the Pittsburgh Penguins, have offered Czech hockey star Jaromír Jágr a one-year contract. Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg visited Benghazi on Wednesday for talks with members of Libya's National Transitional Council in first official meeting with Libyan rebels. Mr. Schwarzenberg also delivered some 2.5 million crowns worth of humanitarian aid destined for a field hospital near the city of Misrata. Upon his return, the foreign minister will also transport a number of children patients from Libya for treatment in Czech hospitals. The Czech government approved on Wednesday another three healthcare reform bills. If passed by parliament and signed into law by the president, the legislation will change the rules for assisted reproduction, sterilization and castration, among other things. It will also overhaul the emergency rescue system and its funding, as well as rules governing the handling of patients' records. The bills are part of a broader healthcare reform that, among other things, introduces standard healthcare covered by public insurance and extra care paid for by the patients themselves. The bulk of the reform bills were approved by the lower house last week. German and Austrian firms operating in the Czech Republic complain about the lack of German-speaking workers, according to a survey by the Czech-German Chamber of Commerce released on Wednesday. A mere 15% out of the 222 companies polled said the availability of Czech workers with a command of the German language was good, while more than a half said it was insufficient. The Czech-German Chamber of Commerce therefore plans to promote the teaching of German in Czech schools. There are some 4,000 German, Austrian and Swiss firms operating in the Czech Republic, providing more than 100,000 jobs. Ticket fares on Prague public transport are set to increase by 6 crowns on the 1st of July, while their validity will be prolonged. Beginning on Friday, the basic ticket will cost 24 crowns, or $1.2. However, it will be valid for 30 minutes and will be also allow the passenger to transfer freely between trams, buses and the metro, which was not possible before. The extended ticket will now cost 32 crowns and will be valid for 90 minutes. The price of the daily pass will increase from 100 to 110 crowns, while monthly, quarterly and yearly passes will cost the same. On Friday, the prices of Prague's park and ride facilities will also double from 10 to 20 crowns per day. The Pittsburgh Penguins have offered Czech hockey veteran Jaromír Jágr a one-year contract to return to the NHL. Pittsburgh general manager Ray Shero said the team had offered a fair price and had been impressed by the Czech star player at this year's World Championships in Slovakia. Jágr, who has played in the Continental Hockey League over the last 3 years, is expected to reach a decision soon. Jágr began his NHL career with Pittsburgh 20 years ago and won back-to-back Stanley Cups. The Detroit Red Wings have also expressed an interest in acquiring Jágr, while at one point a potential move to Montreal was also highlighted in the media. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The next few days will be mostly overcast with rain and storms. Daytime highs should range between 22 and 26 degrees Celsius. My name is Jan Richter and it's the end of the news.
Hello, you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name is Sarah Borufka. Coming up in today's program, Muslim leaders from Central and Eastern Europe meet in Prague to discuss issues that affect their communities. The former head of the Czech Football Association has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for committing credit card fraud. And in our spotlight this week, we take you to the Prague neighborhood of Karlín. All that and more coming up, so do stay with us. Muslim leaders from the Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary, and Slovakia came to Prague on Tuesday to share their experiences and to discuss the challenges faced by their communities. The numbers of the Muslim populations in their countries vary significantly, as do their historic backgrounds. But the debate showed that some challenges are shared by Muslims across the region: Islamophobia, media bias, and severe legislative restrictions. Jan Richter reports.
The Muslim presence in Central Europe goes back centuries, but today's Muslim communities in the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Poland and Hungary only began to form in the 1970s and 80s, with the influx of students from the Middle East and North Africa. The sizes of the present-day Muslim communities in each of the Visegrad group countries range from around 35,000 in Poland to less than 5,000 in Slovakia. This is one of the reasons why legislation makes it difficult for Muslim organizations to register as religious communities and acquire the same rights as much more populous religious groups. In Poland, Islam enjoys the same status as the Catholic Church and other mainstream religions. In the Czech Republic, Slovakia and Hungary, however, there are far too few Muslims for the groups to be granted rights such as teaching religion in public schools, performing services in the armed forces and in prisons. Also, they are not eligible for state funding. Vladimír Saňka is the head of the Islamic Center in Prague.
Religious community may apply for these rights only after 10 years of its registration and submitting more than 10,000 signatures of its adult supporters residing in the Czech Republic, who are committed to it and provide their personal data. This high numerical census will probably not be feasible even in the horizons of decades.
Slovak legislation is the most restrictive of the Visegrad countries. There, the law requires 20,000 signatures for a religious group to even register, and Slovakia is perhaps the only European country without a mosque. Muhammad Safwan Hasna is the head of Slovakia's Islamic Foundation.
According to 18th century data, there were nearly 300 Muslim families living in Bratislava, mostly merchants from the Balkans. A Moorish-style mosque was built at that time that survived until the Second World War. It would be interesting to find out why Bratislava in the 18th century was more tolerant than it is now.
The conference, organized by the Anna Lindh Foundation together with the Prague-based Institute for International Relations, also highlighted the issue of Islamophobia in post-communist countries of Central Europe and the role of the media. Konrad Pędziwiatr is a researcher from the Tyszna European University in Krakow, Poland.
I believe that the media play a very important role. Instead of providing the public with the balance and informative reporting, they provide basically stereotypes. And they strengthen the stereotypes, and I argue that they create a new folk devil. In the past, it used to be the Jews. Now the Jews are gone, so now the Muslims are a new folk devil.
The leaders of the Czech, Slovak, Hungarian and Polish Muslim communities said fighting against media bias and prejudice would be crucial for their integration within the society. They also noted their communities were dynamically growing, both through migration and conversion, which will in the future put further pressure on both Muslims and the majority population.
Thanks for this report, Jan. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. The former head of the Czech Football Association, František Valovský, has been sentenced to 10 years in prison after being convicted of credit fraud. Mr. Valovský was once a major figure in Czech football, but has spent the last 10 years trying, so far unsuccessfully, to defend himself from charges of corruption. Rob Cameron has more.
Prague's municipal court ruled on Tuesday that František Chvalovský and four others gave false details to the Komerční Banka bank when applying for an $88 million bank loan. The false information was given on two occasions in 1998 and 1999, and the funds were used not for a business venture, but to pay off existing debts and for personal reasons. Martina Lohotáková is the court spokeswoman.
The
defendants submitted false information when applying for the loan. The defendants also failed to use the funds for the purposes stated in the application. The initial legal proceedings took far too long. The criminal case against the defendants had to be amended 3 times because of errors in it.
The court ruled that Mr. Chwalowski and his co-defendants must compensate the bank for the damage caused by the credit fraud. Mr. Chwalowski, who denies the allegations, appealed against the verdict. He didn't appear in court, but his lawyer, Jindřich Reichl, spoke to reporters afterwards.
There hasn't been one wise decision during this entire case, so I wouldn't expect one now at the close of it. As for my client's future plans, no matter how this court case is resolved, I can assure you he has no intention of returning to football.
František Chwalovský was chairman of the Czech FA until 2001, overseeing a period in which the Czech Republic got to the finals of the European Championships. However, observers say the period was one marked by high-level corruption in the sport, claims it still hasn't shaken off. Mr. Chwalovský was eventually arrested at Prague's Ruzyně Airport as he was about to board a plane to Macedonia with the national team for a friendly match and later spent 10 months in pre-trial detention. He was fired from the post in 2001. There have even been claims Mr. Chwalovský intends to seek re-election to the post of Czech FA chairman. As his lawyer Jindřich Reichl says, there is no truth in those rumours. Mr. Reichl, however, is also the body's deputy chairman, and he is standing.
Thank you for this report, Rob. And now, in today's spotlight, we stay in the capital and explore the neighbourhood of Karlín. Christian Falvey has more.
Prague's leafy central suburb of Karlín may best be known outside the Czech Republic for the devastating floods that laid ruin to it in 2002. But much of the world has been using the machines and products born of Karlín factories for more than 100 years. And aside from that, it's also Prague's oldest suburb, a point recalled by an exhibition being held this year at the City Museum in Prague that was created by historian Dr. Zdeněk Mika.
Compared with other areas that surrounded Prague in the Middle Ages, this area was special because it was very sparsely inhabited and based on very sparse inhabitation in prehistory. Archaeologists have hardly ever come up with anything, unlike in neighboring Libang, where there are permanent settlements from even the Stone Age. And at least one reason for this was the danger of flooding. People's experience with this area was that whenever there was a rise in water, this area was flooded. And so no one settled it permanently. It was used for agriculture, there were meadows, pastures, and fields here, but their owners lived in Prague.
There were major floods in Karlín in 1784, 1845, 1890, and most devastatingly of all, in 2002. Today there are plaques all over the quarter marking the surface of the Vltava that August, many of them more than a meter over your head or more. When asked why people continued to build here, Dr. Mika says that that is exactly the question reasonable people have been asking for almost 200 years. In the 13th century, the land here became the property of the Knights of the Cross with the Red Star, who controlled it for the better part of the whole of Czech history until 1848. When it ceased to be a reminder of the medieval feudal system, and Austrian bureaucrats took over its management.
Karlín was established in a different way than the other Prague suburbs, which grew out of smaller settlements. The Austrian officials at the time simply decided there was going to be a new suburb in 1817 and to call it Karolinenthal. And soon there was a need to name it in Czech as well. Many people assume that with so many things in Prague named after Charles IV, Charles Square, Charles Bridge, Charles University, that the neighborhood of Karlín follows suit. But that is not the case at all. It is named after Caroline Augusta of Bavaria, the wife of the Austrian emperor and Czech king of the time, Francis I. So Karolinenthal, meaning Caroline's Valley. But it was difficult to translate comfortably into Czech, and so the easiest, shortest version won out in the end. Karlín.
There are some beautiful old illustrations of this part of Prague at the exhibition at the City Museum that allow you to explore the many likenesses of an area that has changed radically on a number of occasions. Originally, only fields and the Knights of the Cross Hospital, which gave the area its first name, Spitalské pole, or Hospital Fields. One dominant feature is the main road that in centuries to come would be renamed Kralovská, Royal, recalling the coronation procession of Ferdinand V, which passed down the street in 1836, and remains today as Sokolovská. Another feature in the pictures are the beautiful Baroque brick city walls that extended to the intersection called Florence.
You can see here on this oldest illustration, it's the same territory as today. It was bounded on the one side by the hill of Vítkov, on the other by the river Vltava. One side ended at the fortifications of the new town, and the other went on to Libeň. When the city walls were torn down in the mid-1870s, they left a strip of prime construction land. The walls had become absolutely obsolete, of no use in an age when war was waged in a more modern way. They were an obstacle to traffic and they were falling apart. So Prague, Vienna, all of the big cities of the Austrian Empire at that time had their city walls taken down.
The space taken by the walls was promptly used to construct, for one thing, the City Museum itself, and the last of Prague's beautiful old railway stations, Nádraží Těšínov. That, in turn, was torn down in the 1970s to make room for the noisy, smelly, and generally hideous central thoroughfare that remains the source of so many city planning arguments today. But the central part of Karlín has retained much of its own special character, atypical for Prague because it was originally planned.
The project to build Karlín was designed according to strict requirements beforehand, making a system of right-angle streets, three main longitudinal streets with six perpendicular side streets, a very rational system that was well thought through from the engineering point of view. Karlín was being used to meet needs that Prague, closed off by its medieval planning system, could not fulfill. And so, for example, a major industry of textile printing was built there. There was a paper mill and eventually five minor machine works, including one of the world's major tram producers, ČKD. And it was in Karlín that the first gas works were built to light the lamps of Prague streets.
All this makes Karlín today a region of aged brick smokestacks among beautiful 19th century four-story neo-romantic buildings that served as home and office to middle-class merchants, tradesmen, and industrial managers.
When Karlín got out from under the rule of the Knights of the Cross in the second half of the 19th century very quickly, it became one of the most affluent parts of the Czech lands thanks to the great amount of industry and the cargo dock. Now a forgotten arm of the Vltava that has been paved over, a vastly important port that was controlled by the major Prague distributors and bankers. And so, even though it was an industrial quarter, Karlín never had the kind of proletariat character of other villages on the outskirts of Prague, like Žižkov, but more of a bourgeois, artisan environment, a middle class.
Change always seems to move at a rapid pace in this part of Prague, the most evident example of that being the transformation over the last 9 years since the incredible disaster left by the flood.
After the last flood of 2002, Karlín recovered very quickly. You can even say that the neighborhood made money off of it, even though it was a tragic event, and the damage was catastrophic in the weeks, months, and year following. But life returned very quickly to the streets of Karlín, and no one today would recognize that there ever was a flood. And most importantly, the area was modernized tremendously.
There are many sides to Karlín now, from the sleek new office buildings going up along the Vltava one after the other, to the central Karlín streets that seem to have never changed over the last 100 years, themselves home to many a brand new restaurant and café, and the parks and tree-lined streets that have a particular quietness that no other central suburb can quite offer. Thank you.
Christian Falvey with this week's edition of Spotlight. Thank you, Christian. And now we are rounding off our regular weekday program with Soundcheck, our popular Czech language learning program brought to you this time by Jan Wellinger. Došli mi síly najednou,
teď za hostu chvíli. Today we feature a song by one of the most popular Czech bands of the 1990s, Lucie. The song is called Laura and is all about running out of energy, or spirit, or gas. The words to look out for are Došli mi síly. Asi jsem sám. Došli mi síly najednou. Teď za hostu chvíli. The song is all about a main protagonist who quite simply is at his rope's end. And the song is full of imagery of loss and defeat. Došli mi síly means to run out of strength, and it can be both physical or even spiritual. It means to be burnt out. You might tell your boss you can't get an assignment done simply because you're out of steam. Došli ki síly. You ran out of energy. You were completely knackered. In sports, specifically in cycling, if I remember correctly, they used to say to hit the wall when you run out of strength. It doesn't matter when. It can be mere meters from the finish. In the song, Lucie sing, Došli mi síly najednou. I ran out of strength suddenly. My strength drained away fast. Došli mi síly najednou, teď za hostu chvíli. Hora vysoká. Elsewhere, the singer says, Možná je to naposled, co na cestu svítím. Maybe it's the last time I'll shine a light on this path. And the general mood and imagery, from climbing a high mountain to crossing a wild river, falling into a deep ravine, suggest weariness and a Sisyphus-like task, as if the protagonist were stumbling punch-drunk across a desert. The final lyrics are, Break my wings, I will not fly away. Došli mi síly najednou, teď za hostu chvíli. Another way of expressing extreme exhaustion in Czech would be to say unavený k smrti, tired to death. Or you might say simply, já na to už nemám, I just haven't got what it takes to get the job done. You could also say you were vyřízený, completely finished. When you say it about others, it doesn't mean they're just momentarily tired either, but worse, they're completely washed up. Laura is a beautiful, drawn-out song by Lucie, but one of anguish. Bosí nohy na kameni, bare feet on rock, are words sung at one point, and you know there's not much hope for the protagonist as he moves on. He's run the course, he seems deathly tired, and he's just about done. Asi jsem sám. Došli mi síly najednou. Teď za hostu chvíli. Jan Wellinger with Soundcheck there, wrapping up Radio Prague's English show for today. All of our programs and others are available at our internet address, radio.cz. And if you have any comments, we're of course always pleased to hear them. You can contact us either at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, or find us on Facebook. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, but until then, from me, Sarah Borůvka, and from all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.